find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hi, I'm Janet Davlin, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Buddy, I see you out there. How you doing? How's it hanging? How are you? Looking cute. You looking cute in the back. I see you. Tell me more. Tell me more.
Ooh, a little Grease reference.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back yet again to the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast, episode, I don't even know, 309, I believe. Since pandemic time, it's been hard to even keep count. There's been what I feel like has been a million podcasts, and we are only halfway through the year. We are officially at the halfway point. So welcome to the show. That is Mike down in Georgia, where Mike couldn't even come to Jersey right now. If he's not even allowed in at the moment.
No. Now, technically, the rule is I either A, have to show a negative test, or B, I would have to quarantine myself in New Jersey for 14 days before I can actually go out and do something.
Oh, so you'd have to come in and hang out my house for like 14 days.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm just going to be in the Brennan basement. Oh, and like, still feel good, Scotty. Can't wait to see you in 6 days.
So we could still remote podcast, but you'll just be in the basement and I'll be upstairs. Did I lose you?
Hello?
Yo. Hey. You hear me?
There you go. You're back.
No, I said
I can come up there and do my remote, and then when my 2 week vacation's over with, I head back home saying that was productive.
Yeah. It would be weird. We've been doing it remote for so long. We've been kind of ahead of the game as far as doing it remotely. It'd almost be weird doing it live again. Like, I don't even know what it's like to sit in the same room with you right now.
Yeah, we came close. I was supposed to be up in Jersey in March as my company was going to open up a place in New Jersey, and then something happened. Some people might not remember. It's a throwback to 2019.
Yeah,
came around, and those plans were scrapped. So. Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait for something important to happening and all. And
yeah, I like, what things would bring you back to visit New Jersey? Like, work obviously would be one. Is there any other reason for you to even come this way?
I got some family there. My sister moved back to New Jersey. God bless her.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't be anti going to Jersey. To be honest, I'd probably emphasize more like going to New York City or going to some other places. I mean, I still got some.
Oh yeah, you should go to New York City. Stuff. You should go to New York City right now. It's a blast out there right now.
Oh, the night scene is excellent. It's pretty amazing. Where the craziest parties are in Alabama right now. Where I'm not sure if you heard this. They're having COVID parties where people who know they have go to parties and see if they can spread it. That was the news article that came out today.
Is it time to just drop a nuke on Alabama? Like, is it time? I mean, like, Jesus Christ. I mean, what is wrong? We're never getting out of this. This is what we're going to be doing for the rest of our lives. I'm pretty sure this is it.
Well, I mean, I was pretty much an introvert for most of my life. So, I mean, it fits right in. And, you know, they'll be like, this is the afterlife at seven. I'm like, is there people up there? Because if there is, I'd rather go back to my basement, St. Peter.
So if you died and you went to the afterlife and it was just kind of like, I don't know, like a room, a comfy couch and a TV and a fully stocked refrigerator, you'd be like perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think I could make the most of it from there. I mean, with my luck, there'd be heaven COVID and I would get it the second I'm in the big line getting judged. And then I'd have to be quarantined in limbo for 2 weeks. And
yeah,
Lord knows what happens after that. I mean, I don't know. There's a waiting period if I had to visit some lawyer or whatever, which means I would have to go down for one of those and then or to get back up. I mean, yeah, I'd be like, listen, just put me in a coma and leave me down there in the basement. The wife would probably be happy.
Yeah. I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm so sick of the word COVID-19 or talking about COVID-19, and there's nothing else to talk about. It's just like I've heard every bad joke, I've heard every stupid mask debate, I've heard every overreaction, and I've heard every quarantine hair joke, every quarantine picture. It's just it's like we're done with this topic. Now, what the hell else are we allowed to talk about or do? There's not much.
Maybe we should just rename the thing.
Rename it? Okay.
Yeah.
Like
well,
what?
Well, the year's 2020, so why don't we call it the Perfect Vision Virus, the PVV?
Oh, boy. So you're like signing up for the COVID-19 marketing team, and your first pitch was the Perfect Vision Virus.
Yeah. I mean, it harkens back to the year. It's a cute little kind of punish thing. I mean, getting a t-shirt that says PVV on it is way more comforting than COVID-19.
Right.
I mean, I could totally see somebody having a blast with it again, like a big back tattoo with PVV on it. I totally could see the movement, and I maybe even make a band called PVV and have them tour around the country.
Oh, are you going to be involved in this band? Are you going to be stepping up to the front of this, or are you just going to be working the magic from behind?
I think I'll let the band do all the work. I feel like I'd be best wearing like a all white suit jacket, you know, just
like a preacher.
Just out there tapping my feet. Do my work, boys.
Well, you're definitely in the right territory to start like a preacher band. You know, like I feel like it would work better down where you are than where I am. Speaking of band, did you see what Sacha Baron Cohen did?
I heard about it. I didn't really read up on it. So if you got some info, please share with me.
Sacha Baron Cohen is probably one of the best comedic minds we have today.
He's a very underrated genius. Like nobody, like if you say like top five comedy guys or influencers, he doesn't come up. But when he does a project, you're like, damn, that guy can commit to a bit.
Oh my God. The balls this guy has, man. It's just, I mean, when you think of Borat and then you think of the stunts he pulled in Bruno and then you think of the stunts he pulled with, what was his show?
Ali G, was it?
Ali G. That was that one. And he did the one.
The political one you're talking about.
Yeah. A couple years ago, or it might even be this. I wouldn't be surprised if what he pulled now was like season two of, was it This Is America or I Am America? Something like that.
I'm looking it up. Continue. Yeah.
So if you did not hear, go look. Just Google Sacha Baron Cohen right now. He basically was able to throw a super right-wing conservative rally and play in a band. Who Is America, I think was.
Who Is America, yeah. Yep, I just got it.
So he was able to get into a conservative rally in Washington, and he was able to get on stage and start to get this sing-along going, where he talks, he gets people to chant, you know, like the Saudis do. I gotta read the lyrics here. Like what you got? So he would bring up like Obama and Fauci and Clinton, and like the response would be like, chop them up like the Saudis do. Like, and of course, of course he's able to get them to kind of call and respond to his ridiculousness. I don't know if I could get it here. Chop them up like the Saudis do.
It sounds like a song I should be wiggling my finger to, Scott. Chop, chop, chop.
Lock her up like we used to do. Well, you gotta watch for yourself. I don't want to play that video really into the mic right now, but he essentially had cameras and security and everything, and then, you know, he went on for the video is like 8 minutes long. It's like chop 'em up like the Saudis do, and they're like chop 'em up like the Saudis do, and they're like it's something about the Wuhan flu. I hope they get the Wuhan flu, and he's in this big, he's in like overalls and a red plaid shirt, and they don't even know. And the security guards happened to be all his security guards, so they were actually there to protect the band, and people didn't even. No, it's just absolutely goddamn brilliant, man. He pulled it off again.
He's like kind of like Andy Kaufman used to be, you know. He's right. He just sits back and he picks the right moments and he can record it, and every time like it comes out, like somebody's, oh well, I got fooled. That's not how I really feel. Yeah. I got fooled. And well, I mean, I think the best is still when he got Dick Cheney to sign his watering board, if I recall.
Yeah. Dude, it's... Sorry. He came back for a second. The best is like people afterwards were like, oh, a couple red flags. Like, there's no red flag. There's no red flag because you got caught. You got fooled. You people were singing along, clapping their hands. Can you imagine being a grown man chanting chop him up like the Saudis do, like getting that into it, and like Hillary Clinton, what we're gonna do, lock her up like we used to. the thing about him, which is so great, is that no, regardless of your political standpoints, like the guy is still hilarious. Like I would think even like your most Republican people would find that piece hilarious. You know, he's just able to infiltrate and people, they can't pick him out. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he's had plenty of lawsuits since doing half of this stuff, but it's always funny. It's like, well, you know, that was done out of humor. It's like, yeah, but the humor was that you didn't know it was humor.
Yeah.
That's the funny part. So,
and also he's so brilliant because he's getting his point across by impersonating like the complete stereotype of what he's actually making fun of. So he's like able to do his comedy through like characters, but he steps it up a whole notch because he goes to like insanely dangerous places and just pulls the irony out of people, and they don't even realize it, like of them doing certain things. I guess he's not an American treasure. Where is he even from? Is he?
I think I still got his.
Well, he's definitely an American treasure as far as his comedy, but I don't know where he's. Where is he born? France? I don't know.
But, I think he was French. I know he played like a French guy in the Talladega Nights movie.
But... Yeah, and honestly, like that movie, like I didn't even care for that him in that movie that much. It's his other stuff that I think he's like. He's just so brilliant that I think he's so brilliant that we like easily forget about him. Like if his career ended 10 years ago and it was Borat and the Ali G show, people couldn't come close to that. They would wish for that once in a lifetime, you know?
Yeah. Number one, he was born in London.
Okay.
I would so never English. Guess okay. that. And I mean, it's not only like committing to the character, his improv skills in the character is just
and the ability
absolutely insane.
The ability to stay calm. You know, that guy's probably almost died, like, or just the amount of times he's almost got, like, his ass beat has to be numerous times. Like, imagine what's left on the cutting room floor that we don't even see. Like, but God, when Borat first came out, I thought it was like the funniest movie I ever saw. It was so funny, man. That, like, the stunts he was able to pull off of that, and that's one that I feel like, you know, if I have a son or something like that, or a daughter, whatever, like, when he gets older, I'm like, I gotta show you Borat, man. Like, all the stuff might not be contextually there by that point. Who knows? Who knows if we'll even be alive at that point? But that's something you got to show to, like, your kids. Be like, this, now this is comedy right here.
Yeah, this will work out. No, it's not like when our parents showed us Amos and Andy. That was like, whoa, what are you doing here? I mean, this, yeah, that one is the keeper to go through.
Like, I'm
like, some of our other shows don't do.
I'm thinking about, like, that scene in Borat where he sleeps over that family's house and he stays over the house and he wakes up with them and whatever, and they catch him in the middle of the night.
When he also, he's like, I went to the bathroom and he had a paper bag to hand over to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine, like, living with him, like, being his spouse. It's got to be like, oh my God, like, I'm never going to see my husband again. He's going to get killed here.
Isla Fisher, she was in Catch Me If You Can and a few other movies.
Oh, that's just, okay. But yeah, that is, if anybody did not see that yet, you need to go check it out. And I have a feeling we're going to see that again. I really think that's, they might have pulled it off for a season two of that show he's doing. And the thought that must go into the pre-planning on getting the crew to looking inconspicuous and the rest of the band. And he had, you know, he had two bands, and the one band that opened for him was like supposed to be like a legit band to kind of get the, you know, it's well thought out to get the crowd, like, settled. And then, like, his band came on and chop them up like the Saudis do, was what you have American people singing at the top of their lungs. So,
I mean, the plan has to be done, and he has to wait. And probably after, like, something comes out, he's got to sit back and say, all right, we can't do anything for like 9 to 12 months.
Yeah.
Like, we got to make sure everybody forgets about me for a minute.
True.
And then strike.
Yeah, and there's no retakes too. You know, like, there's no let's do that again, because it's all got to get caught at the right time, the right moment. And it's not like they could set up a second rally. We got to get more footage or try this again. Like, it's not going to work like that. But dude,
you know, there were some people there live that, like, were tweeting it and stuff like,
oh, yeah,
that. These guys are great. Yeah. These Americans.
Maga, 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 maga. But it's just he's good. When I was singing the song to myself, like, in my head, like, oh, like the side of you do. I'm like, I shouldn't sing that out loud at all. but it was just he's a monster, man. Like, I wish I appreciated him more, not just when he does this. Like, you know, like you were kind of saying, you kind of forget about him, and then he pulls off something else amazing. You're like, oh my God! Like, he should be considered just, like, you know, he should be up there with, like, the Ricky Gervaises as far as, like, comedic acting and all that stuff of regarded like that. But yeah, go check that out.
But he's so laid back. I'm sure he's even kind of like, yeah, forget about me. He does his thing, you know, that was great. Thank you. All right, go away.
Yeah, I think part of his thing is to not get too much attention afterwards, because he's got, like you said, he's got to kind of vanish back into the night. He's like the Foot Clan, you know. He's got to go back into hiding. You don't see too many interviews with him either. Like, you know, like, I don't even know what he's like normally. Like, what kind of guy is, if he's like a super nice guy, or he's just kind of like an introverted kind of, you know, one of those cerebral guys, you know, like, you know, he's like one of those guys who had like a life mission, like an angle in his comedy, and just like stuck to it for all these years, like, and never wavered from it. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, if you ever need evidence of how cool he is, he got sued by Kazakhstan. I mean, come on.
The European
country sued him because of his fictitious movie.
Very nice.
Oh, man, how many people had that imitation for...
Oh, my God. You know, this is making me want to go rewatch, like, Borat or Bruno, which I didn't like as much as Borat, but... dude, if you want, you can go look up the old Ali G clips, and it's hysterical. Like what he's able to get people to say, or the reactions he's able to get out of people. He's underappreciated, is what I'm saying. But speaking of other countries, our guest tonight is from another country.
What would have been the segue if we had somebody from the United States? Out of curiosity.
Speaking of America. Speaking of American treasures, this next guest is I don't know if we've had a guest from Ireland, where our guest is from. We're calling her in London, but she is from Ireland originally, and I don't think we've had too many people from the Emerald Isle before, so this might be a first. But I told this story about I must have maybe I'll tell it again anyway. Remember I told you about my trip to Ireland, right?
Yeah, I've heard it a few times.
Yeah. Well, I might as well tell it for the listeners here. So when I was in college, I did a semester in London, and we decided to do like 3 days that we had off and take a little puddle jumper plane over to Ireland, and which was the scariest plane I've ever been on. It was a 40-minute flight or something like that, and the lights were flickering. Like every time we hit turbulence, it was awful flight, full on panic. But anyway, I went with this guy, Nate, which full circle, which is kind of funny because that guy, Nate, I met on the trip because I didn't know anybody going on the trip. The guy I was supposed to go with like backed out and kind of lied to me last second. we were talking about disses on the last episode. This kid told me, he was going. I'm like, all right, I got my paperwork in. You know, it wasn't cheap. I paid a lot of money to go. And I'm like, oh, you going to the seminar? Because there was like a little, you know, what to expect kind of seminar and the things, you know, places to be. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, no, I'm like, I'm not going. And I was like, wow. And he just like, so it was just me and basically like a lot of other people that knew each other, but I didn't know them, which probably actually turned out for the better because it was a great, like, you know, throw yourself out there kind of thing. And so I met with this kid, Nate, in full circle. He's the guy who got me that mattress modeling job, whatever it is, 15 years later for Sleep Ovation. And bad announcement, I think my mattress modeling career is over, by the way, Berlo.
What happened?
He no longer works for the company, so I don't really have an in there unless I really start advertising myself as the mattress king.
Well, I mean, you have the resume item right there. I mean, you just go in there with that. And then what you do is you show a picture with you and your wife. And if they don't like that, then what you do is you you Photoshop in that friend who didn't go on the Ireland trip. If they like that, then you call them up. It's like, listen, you didn't go on that trip. You owe me. Right. Come on and sit on a mattress with me. We're going to get paid and we're going to get our photos taken. Don't worry about it.
So from we go to Ireland. There's four of us from the London group. We go to Ireland for a couple of days, and it's rainy and just like nasty weather most of the time. The kid I went with had really, really bad asthma to the point where we're sleeping in this hostel, and he's like, "I can't breathe." I'm like, "You're right, dude. I'm like, we gotta go to a doctor or something." It was like kind of late. It was in the middle of Dublin, which is not apparently like the safest town. Like they said, you know, it's like any town, like the main area is pretty nice, but apparently like you kind of go off the beaten path and there's like Russian mob everywhere. And like,
Yeah. Kind of like Bulgaria was. Yeah. I know that vibe right there.
Yeah. Like great bars to visit, really cool places, but they're like, don't go down that way.
Oh yeah. Like I remember when I was in Bulgaria, I was out with a buddy. We're at a bar and we got down this like 300-pound jacked Bulgarian guy. He's like, "You want me to get you a cab?" We're like, no, we can do it. And he kept on following us. "I can get you a cab. We're good. We saw the movie Hostel. We're good.
I like how your Russian accent came out again. But, you know, Russian's close enough where I could you could pass for Bulgarian because I would do not know what a Bulgarian accent sounds like. So
well, it's kind of the same dialect. Like Bulgarian language is literally like an offshoot of the Russian language. Or I forget what, I guess they call it Baltic languages. Kind of like Ukrainian, Bulgarian.
I have a story. I have a story I could tell later, too, about my new Russian neighbor. But, so we go to the emergency room. We find, and now in the emergency room, I guess Ireland healthcare is covered. So what we noticed was like a ton of people in the waiting room in the emergency room. And I guess what happens is what we learned was like, at least at that time, I don't know if things changed. Like a lot of the homeless people would just like make up a symptom and go inside into the waiting room because it was warm. And, you know, this was January. It was warm, and they, you know, it would take a couple hours for you to get seen by a doctor or nurse. So you get maybe catch 3-4 hours in a nice warm spot and be like, oh, my arm hurts, you know, and then go back out. So I get it, but man, was it kind of scary, man. It was like we'd be sitting there, and all these homeless people, like one after another, would just approach us and like ask us for money and try to like talk to us. Like some were friendly, but some were definitely like, you know, the aggressive homeless that are on the street sometimes, but all in a room. So it was really weird, man. But eventually we were like sitting in the room, and he got some like nebulizer thing, and we were all right. But it was a interesting way to see part of Dublin. That's what I'm saying. But I don't know if it's still like that. Maybe Janet can tell us about that. But so our guest coming up on the show, she was on X Factor. She has a lot of songs that are very big hits. She just released recent music. She's very open, very honest about her personal struggles, and she makes a lot of really nice music, and she should be fun to talk to. So let's get Janet Devlin on the line. Hey, Janet, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Great, how's it going?
Oh, grand. It is what it is at this point.
Yes.
It is what it is.
Well, I mean, where are we calling it? I think you're in London, right?
Yeah, London, yeah.
All right. Well, we're calling you from lovely New Jersey here. So, I got to ask you, what's pandemic life over there in England? You guys lightening up at all, or are you able to go out, or not much?
We're allowed to leave the house as many times as we want, but we're not allowed to meet anybody outside of the household unless they're like 2 meters apart and the maximum of 6. Only a few restaurants are open. Like, not like it's pretty crap. Like the gyms and stuff are still closed. Everything's still closed.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm tired now.
Yeah, it gets old after a while. Like I'm very sick of my own cooking. I'm very sick of cleaning up after myself. It's starting to get old.
Yeah.
So, Jenna, I guess like with this pandemic time and being a musician and whatnot, I know you have some new stuff coming out. But do you find this time? Are you able to be creative during this time? Or are you the type of person this is like driving you mad and you can't get past the writer's block?
It's honestly it's different day by day. Like I've had days where I'm like all I want to do is write, and I'll just sit and I'll be with the ukulele and write some like country songs and stuff, and then have good times. And then there's other days where I'm just like, oh, I'm sorry, did you want me to be creative? Because I'm currently really busy between 4 and 7 with smashing my head against the brick wall. How can you fit that in, actually, you know?
Yeah, we've talked to like a couple of musicians over the last, I don't know, what it's been 3 months now, really. And it's funny how people have different ads. Some people are like, this is a great time for me to sit and record. Others are like, I can't come up with anything. I can't, you know, there's just no inspiration sitting at home. So,
yeah.
This is my 12th song about being stuck in the house.
Yeah.
This one's about isolation.
Yeah, a lot of lonely lyrics coming up after this. A lot of.
Well, I don't know. I've still managed to have boy problems within the confines of my own bedroom. Sean, all right. How is it possible that we're not even in the proximity of each other, but you're still playing mind games? I love it. Thank you for the music. I appreciate it.
We're men. We're impervious to driving women crazy. We'll find a way. Yep.
It's a beautiful thing not having feelings and just saying whatever you say, I'm more right. I mean, exactly. It's been working for us so far.
Oh, gosh.
So I we brought up about you. I mean, we know the whole history of going on X Factor and so forth and all the emotions you went through. As you kind of look back, I mean, do you almost wish, like, Janet of this age was discovered on the show versus a 16-year-old Janet, or you think that had to be done to get, like, through your whole life cycle, if you will?
I think I had to do it that way, because I took school very seriously, so I would have probably just have pursued my degrees and then never really, you know... I would have definitely done music, but I don't think I would have taken it too seriously, because I was very much raised with this whole, you know, you can't get a job in music. It's not a thing. It's not real.
Yeah.
X, Y, Z. So in a dream world, I would have taken my year out and done music and been fine. But I know that, you know, little things like that I've learned about myself, like especially like the alcoholism and stuff. I'm really glad that I did this show young, because it allowed me to then have the money to get super drunk all the time, so then I could learn that I was an alcoholic without, you know, learning. Now I would hate to be like turning 25 and then finding out that I'm an alcoholic, because like I feel like I'm getting sober at 20.
So you wouldn't want to be a broke years. You don't want to be a broke alcoholic. You wanted to be able to forge your habit. Yeah. And then realize
I got to do both. I got to be a broke alcoholic, and I also got to be like a decent making money alcoholic. And let me tell you, it's way more fun to be an alcoholic when you're not broke.
I think most things are.
For today, children.
Take away anything from this, yeah, it's that being an alcoholic sucks when you have no money.
I'm pretty sure it sucks when you have money too, but it's probably a little bit more fun. It's a little bit.
Yeah, but it's more fun to like cry over your expensive whiskey than it is to buy a 4-pound bottle from the corner shop. Yeah.
Whoa,
not eating dinner because eating's cheating, you know?
Yeah. What was that X Factor like grind like? What was the, you know, how much time did you have to put into that?
You mean like it wasn't every single day, all hours of the day?
Yeah. Was that what it was?
Yeah, literally. Like we got on so the night of the live show, which was Saturday night, we were allowed, if you begged, you were allowed to go stay with your family or your partner or whatever.
Right.
In a hotel nearby, as long as you could guarantee you were at the studio for 9 a.m. the next day. But everything during the week was just like constant. It was just constantly doing something. Because, yeah, like, you know, you had X Factor, but you also had like the Extra Factor, which we're constantly doing B-roll. X Factor, we're doing B-roll. you had lots of press at the time. You were constantly doing interviews. So it was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Nonstop.
Nonstop. But like, I feel like it taught me a good work ethic, which is good.
Mike, we're losing you there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
You sound like a robot.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Why don't you can't hear you. You just sign off and join back in. We'll get you back. Sounds like an arcade machine.
Yeah.
So I'll try him again in a minute. So when you get an opportunity like that at 16, are you all in? Or is your family all in? Or are you a little skeptical even leading up to it?
I was always very reserved in the sense of like I didn't want to place all of my hopes into one thing, because like, even when I started it, like, I knew I didn't want to win. I just wanted to, like, do my best up until, like, a certain point, until I felt like it was too much. So, like, my family were, like, invested, but also, like, anytime I got to speak to them on the phone, like, my mom would always say, like, no, you understand that you can come home at any time. You're, right. You don't feel bad about leaving. If you want to just come back, that is absolutely fine with us. Don't you worry. And I needed that. I needed to know that that support was always there. Like, I always have to have a backup plan. Like, I have a rule that I need to have a certain amount of money in my bank account so that I know that I could take a flight to a random country and stay at a hotel for like a minimum amount of time. Otherwise, I'll go mental.
Okay.
So like, I always need a backup plan, otherwise I'll go nuts. But yeah, I was in it, but I also just was aware of what I wanted to, like, you know, get out of it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Go ahead. That
must have been like crazy, because if I read up correctly, like, the 1 week you kind of advance on a tiebreaker, so you were probably just like, no, don't do this to me anymore.
Actually, I'd said the week before to the teams and everybody, I was like, because I made it through that week, and then I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to make it. I don't want to. if I don't get kicked, and then I was like, if I don't get kicked off tonight, I'm walking anyway. So yeah. Like, I definitely made my point very clear, because I just reached my own personal, like, and I was like, I made it on the tour, so I knew I was going to get a paycheck, and I didn't want to like bite the hand that fed me, but I was just like, yeah. I'm 16, yeah. I got mental health issues, I'm pretty like done now. I want to go like pat my dog.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost kind of funny, like how you. Like all the depression you went through and everything you go to, and then like I look up videos and here's you singing Mbop. It's just like a crazy juxtaposition of what you must have been going through.
I did not pick that song, I can tell you that for sure.
Be truthful.
I chose Under the Bridge. I got bartered. They were like, you can sing Under the Bridge if you sing these. And I was like, I'm stuck. I have to do it now. So I did it. I wanted to do Build Me Up Buttercup, because it had to be like a classic like song that gets people singing or whatever. And I was like, name me a better song than that for me, I would say.
So after that whole, you know, that whole era kind of goes away, the X Factor thing, after the, you know, the curtain took it down and whatnot. How do you like, how did you go about kind of, I guess, staying in music and being like, okay, well now I have to kind of figure this out on my own? What was your process? Did you go on tour? Did you go back and try to write an album? What was your reaction to all that?
It was so weird. I think it must be comparable to the feeling that people get when they leave university and they don't have a job.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh look, I did it.
Now what?
But now what?
Yeah.
So it was definitely like that. But like, I knew I wanted to make an album. I got offered a few deals, but all of the offers were exactly the same. It's like, yeah. You like, just either sing your song or sing all these songs that other people have written for you. And then, on the next album, you can sing your own songs. It's fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's just dumb, because even if this album does well, God forbid if it doesn't, like, it's not going to help me. It's no. Like, I would rather live and die by my own sword. So I was like, well, I'm going to go make my own album. So I decided to do a crowdfunded thing before crowdfunding was cool. Cause like, I literally remember people being like, this is never going to work. It was so bad at against. I was on CNN talking about crowdfunding.
Really?
And like, you had like, you had these companies, like bigger record labels being like, yeah, I just never think it's going to really take on. And then you fast forward like 5 years and it's like what everybody's doing or whatever. So I did that. It was successful. Although I made an album and then pinned it because I didn't like it. So then I had to make another album in 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Nice. So that was running scissors. Yeah. But like after the X Factor, so I did all that, but you know, you do the X Factor tour, which was fine, like so that I could have a bit of like cash in my bank or whatever. But then I used all that money and reinvested it back into the music. And then I got frauded, so then I woke up at 18 years old and was bankrupt, which was sick.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great. It was so good. But I somehow managed to get out of that. But I feel like I know I always look on the bright side and it annoys people all the time, but it's like I needed to get bit young to like learn my lesson as to like who to trust. And it wasn't just me, I won't name names, but there were some really big producers, like Grammy award winning people that also got done by this thing. So it was like, because obviously my natural inclination would be like, you're stupid. But it's like, oh no, a lot of people were stupid. It's fine.
Hard times make hard people, right? Isn't that the old saying?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
And when you first got off of everything with X Factor and you're starting to make your own songs and music, were the fans like naturally along with you, or did you ever get like that pushback? No, we want your cover songs that you used to do or anything like that.
No, luckily, like everyone was really supportive. A lot of people loved the album. The only downside was it did take me that much longer to do it because of all the bullcrap that went on in the middle. Which naturally means you lose a bit of an audience because, like, with TV audiences, it's a very short attention span. And it's normally a given that, like, once you leave TV, your audience only ever drops. So I was just really working hard at trying to get new fans, but also, like, keep the ones that I have engaged. And luckily, like, a lot of people stuck around. But, yeah, no one was ever like, oh, my God, I just missed it when you used to sing your song. You know, it was fine. Yeah. It was all good.
So when you started writing, I guess more about your, you know, your personal issues, your personal demons, did that take a while to be okay with kind of writing that material and sharing that material with your audience?
Nah, I was ready ages ago. I was like, yeah. I got so much stuff that you guys don't even know about.
Yeah.
Because I'd have people being like, oh, this song was so emotional. I'm like, it's just about a boy. No one cares. Wait till you hear what I did to myself. It's a hardcore story, dude.
Where do you see what's next?
Literally. So it was so much stuff that I just like knew I was going to work on and write on and all that kind of thing. So I was just genuinely excited to be like, everyone, meet my demons.
Yeah.
What's up?
Did you deal with your, like, kind of, I guess you never really truly heal them all, but did you heal your demons kind of more through music or more on your own and then made the music?
It's always different. It's right. Always so different. So some things I definitely did most of my healing in like a therapy room, but I always have this thing where I'll be like floating along and I think I'm fine and everything's grand, and then I'll pick up an instrument and I'll sit down and write, and then I'm like, oh, look at that, we weren't so good, were we? Oh no. Oh, it's bad. So like I definitely feel like music definitely helps me get across emotions that I struggle to express.
Yeah.
Which is just useful because it's like free therapy, you know.
For sure.
Are you more into like the small bar kind of crowds or into like a big stadium show? I've seen you did a show where you had like 82,000 people on hand for it. I'm guessing that's an interesting feeling out there.
It's always a weird one. I think the hardest gigs to do are the small gigs. Because, like, if you're in an arena, you can't see anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you singing into the black void, which is kind of soothing. Whereas if I do a room of, like, 150 people, it's like, I can see your eyeballs. My guy.
Yeah, yeah. Got to connect, yeah.
Exactly. Mm.
Now, I got to ask you. I'm looking up stuff on you before this interview last week, and I find that one of the weirdest things is that Courtney Love has stated that you guys might be distant relatives to Kurt Cobain. First off, how does that even come about? And two, is there any truth to any of this?
Okay, so yeah, she did reach out and she has the documentation. I don't, because I am not rich enough to seek out my family history.
Okay.
Like, that's an expensive process.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But she has all of that left over from Kurt whenever I think they were doing the whole money side of like inheritance and things like that. So apparently Devlin married into Cobain, and then Cobain moved to America and changed their surname from A-N-E to A-I-N, and that's as far as I know. So if it's distant, that's distant. But will I hold on to it and not myth bust it because I want to pretend like it's real? Absolutely.
Yeah, see, I would like, that would be, like, I feel like that would become a priority for me, like, to try to find out if that's, you know, if that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, but
that's
what if like... it ends up in sad, you know?
So you just want to, like, hold on to
Scott,
the hope.
This is sounding like my story about my family being horse thieves of Europe, and then they broke up.
Yeah, it's pretty similar, Mike.
Yeah, yeah, I... Yeah, my family story is basically we were buckaloos, which were apparently famous European horse thieves. And when the when apparently they were gonna like try to capture the family kind of broke apart. So half the family stayed buckaloos, and my side went to Burloo. So very similar to maybe I'm related to Kurt Cobain. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
23andMe.
Yeah, maybe you'll have the same ending too. What did I want to ask? So the other question is, I was thinking Devlin, and I was thinking Ireland. Is there any chance you're related to Conor McGregor's wife?
No,
she's a Devlin too, right? I think.
Yeah. Well, is her name Devlin?
That was D Devlin, something like that.
Oh yeah, I know what it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I wish. I'll take that one though. I'll pretend.
Keep adding them in there. Yeah, name somebody. I'm related.
Yeah. I'm related. Although in fairness, when you do look at my DNA thingy majigs, you know, like the 23andMe.
Yeah.
Like, not really that much of my family are left in Ireland. It's all in America.
Yeah.
So it's like. All right. Up, family.
Tell us about Confessional. You had the new album, and I know one of the sins was Holy Water, right? Tell us about the new album.
So, I mean, I think people will have gathered right now, it's a pretty honest record. But basically, it's actually a concept record. So the album runs in chronological order with my life and the issues that I've been through.
Okay.
But I still wanted to make the album relatable because I did a few writing sessions and I was like, I'm going to be so honest. I'm going to be the most honest songwriter ever.
Right.
I'm going to be so honest. Anyway, and then I was like, wow, that's very self-indulgent and these songs suck. So then I just binned them. I was like, right, that's not a good idea.
I'm being
like, that's
honestly, nice. They suck. Yeah, that's how honest I'm
being. A little too honest here.
Yeah. So honest, it's like not cool, you know. So I was like, right, okay, then we need to write a book, because I realized obviously I still wanted, my idea of this album was just to be as honest as I possibly could, but then I was isolating the listener. So then I was like, well, let's get really fun with metaphors, like an English class, you know. So the whole album is a big bunch of metaphors for all the things that I've been through. Like an example of that would probably be, I don't know, you could take like cinema screen, for example. Like the song sounds like kind of an emotionally abusive relationship, or like a not a good relationship, and you're trying to break up with the person that you're with because you know that it's no good for you and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually about my eating disorder. And then when you look at the lyrics more closely, it's like, I can feel you on my bones and this pain just feels like home. And like everything's to do with like food and body and all of these things, but it just sounds like a breakup song.
Yeah.
So then the chapter obviously goes from like where my eating disorder started, where it took me, when it came back, where that took me, and then my recovery. So the book isn't like an autobiography either, because it is and it's not. I mean, an autobiography would be written from like start to now, whereas because that's not the way that the album works, it kind of works as in like you jump timeline in my life, but everything revolves more about a specific topic and the stories around that topic than a chronological series of events.
Nice.
I mean, with everything you went through and how honest you are, do you almost wish you kind of have like a song that just goes, everything went easy today, everything's great for me, yay.
There's a song on the album called Big Wide World, and it's literally like the happiest like song I've ever written in my whole life, because it was like about this like euphoric moment that I got twice in my life where I was
twice.
No, but like proper euphoria. Like I've obviously felt happiness one time, you know, like that's
one time. Before. Yeah.
At one time. Yeah. No, but like it's about like the actual euphoria of like you just kind of get hit with this wave. And you step into like a personal anagnorisis, and you're just like, whoa, okay, life's fine. I don't have to die. Life is amazing. I'm meaningless if I don't give myself meaning. Life is meaningless if I don't give it meaning. Everything's beautiful. Everything's great. I'm gravy, baby. You know?
Yeah.
So the song is so happy. It sounds like something out of like Finding Nemo. Like when I was writing it, we wrote it with Marimba. not because I wanted marimba in the song, but I was like, what is happier than marimba?
Yeah. Yeah. So what's on the horizon for you? Clearly, obviously, you know, pandemic and everything has kind of put a wrench in a lot of touring and a lot of, but yeah. What do we have looking for? Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel as far as getting out and playing soon or anything like that?
I always hear people being like, oh yes, small gigs will be open and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. Small gig central, my name.
Yep.
Yeah, nothing's going to change. So as soon as I can get the, like, the green light to go out and perform again, I absolutely will. But I already do online shows and stuff like that. And I've been doing them for 6 years. So like that kind of thing is normal. You know, for me, it's a bit of like an unknown territory as to like what the story's going to be for like plugging. I'll probably plug everything like now and then have a resurgence when the world opens again and you can actually start doing like performances and TV and things like that again properly. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
So
before we get out of here, one thing, I wanted to get your take on, how happy are you that John Frusciante is back in the Chili Peppers? I am pretty excited about it, to be honest.
That's the only good thing that's happened in lockdown. No, it's not. Because I'm really proud of the Black Lives Matter movement right now. So that's the best thing that's happened during lockdown. Second best job that I'm going to get in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I cried because I was like, my dude, welcome back.
Absolutely.
We needed you. No shade to Josh.
He was all right. He just wasn't John.
Josh.
Yep.
He just wasn't John. It's like when you look at the Chili Peppers and their history and their successes, it's like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Was it only when John Frusciante was here? Yes.
Pretty much. Josh was like the cover version of John. Like he was like he tried, but it just wasn't
Well, I liked that he didn't actually try to be John. He always brought like his own thing, because like I love him in Dot Hacker and I love his solo projects and stuff. So I feel like he still stayed very true to himself, which I appreciated, because I honestly think Nahum would have been worse than somebody coming in and going, let me hit you with a groovy riff, man. It's kind of Frusciante. It's not.
Janet, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here on the show. What's the best place for people to check you out or go check your music out or follow you?
Dear God. So I have all of the social media that there is. So like if you go to my website, which is janetdavlin.com, it has a link to all of my socials. But like, I mean, it's the same old thing. It's like, look for the blue tick. If you just type my name in, the blue tech will turn up and that'll be me.
Janet, stay safe and hopefully your music can return to people sooner than later.
I hope so. Thank you so much for your time, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. I think I'm related to Kurt too. Why not? We could all be related to Kurt Cobain.
I mean, it all started with Adam and Eve, so by rule, we had to be associated in some form or fashion.
So you're going with the by rule, we're all related kind of thing.
Yeah.
George is rubbing off on you.
Step one.
George.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that we're all related by marriage in that scenario, but this...
All right, Janet Devlin, everybody.
Scott, zero hospital talk in that interview.
I know.
Very, I mean, it was, how dare she keep on talking about herself? I was waiting for, X Factor was great, but not as great as the healthcare packages here in Dublin.
Yeah, I dropped the ball on that one. But, you know, I figured she told us about enough of her own problems that I want to bring up, like, more emergency room and hospital stuff, so you know, but
yeah, but that's called a segue. You're like, wow, that sounds like a lot of mental anguish. Did you happen to go to a hospital to fix that anguish?
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty good segue.
That would have worked, but you know, it wasn't as good as your speaking of other countries.
Yeah,
but...
speaking of other countries. Well, listen, that's why we get paid the big bucks, and we also haven't been picked up by anybody. So that it's my segues.
Hey, RTF Sports Network, DCN Community Network, coming right up if it's a Japanese website now. And Denville Radio.
Yes.
Denville Radio.
Yes.
Did I forget anybody?
I don't know. BS
Podcast. BS Podcast.
Well, yeah. But I did want to real quick. So Friday night, I think it was Friday night. We'll just say it was Friday night because it doesn't matter. Oh, by the way, Mike, happy Bobby Bonilla Day to you.
Ah, good old Bobby B getting the big bucks.
Yes. You
know?
Yeah.
The man so great that he will be paid past what Bryce Harper's contract is.
Yeah, right? Yeah. As you guys know, Bobby Bonilla, greatest sports contract of all time, is basically paid out by the Mets. And every July 1st, he gets, I think it's $1.19 million for until 2035. So Bobby Bonilla, like I said today, it's a shame that Barry Bonds and Pete Rose and Bobby Bonilla's agent aren't in the Hall of Fame because they all deserve they all deserve a spot. But
I always wondered, like, the next contract after the Bonilla one, like, was the player, like, after he hears what Bonilla gets, like, bro, what the?
It's the golden ticket, man. It's don't have to do a damn thing for the rest of your life. You know, as long as you're not spending like an absolute animal, you don't have to do another thing. You just sit and collect that July 1st check.
And then add to it, after he gets the contract, the Mets are pretty much like, we got to get rid of you. Ship him to Florida, I believe, where he got his World Series ring.
Bonilla has a World Series ring? That's something.
With the Marlins.
All right. Well, damn him. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what Bryce Harper's contract is when that when he's disabled and you guys owe him like 14 more years on his contract.
It's the risk you got to take for guys like this. I mean, it's the same thing with Trout down with the Angels.
I don't think Harper's anywhere near that caliber. He's good. Don't get me wrong. He's good, but he's streaky, man.
It's more the point of the contract type. You basically say, I'm betting on us having a good enough team in the next 5-7 years when you're still in your prime, where when I have to pay you the money in the 10th year, and I'm sitting back going, why am I paying a designated hitter hitting 217
years?
With four home runs, $45 million?
What was his again? 13 years or something?
Trout or...
No, Harper. Something crazy. But yeah.
I mean, it was a decent contract. Trout's was bigger, but...
Yeah. Harper's was the years. It was the most insane amount of years, like, ever in a contract. I think it was the longest one ever signed.
$330 million for 13 years.
13 years, my God. Most people's careers aren't even close to that. Well, I hope that doesn't work out for you for my selfish reasons. Or if we have baseball again. So,
yeah. As a side note, Trout's is 12 years, $430 million. So it's not that terribly different.
Yeah. But what was I saying? Oh, so Friday night. But yeah, happy Bobby Bonilla Day. Friday night, I'm getting ready to have a fire out in my backyard. And I never really met the neighbors behind me. Yet, like, I never really found a good time to kind of introduce myself. I've waved to him and whatever. And, you know, one time my dog went over there, and that was the first time I'm like, hey, you know, I'm like, I had to grab my buddy's out there, and I'm like, hey, man, how are you? And he's like, big, thick Russian accent, like, hey, how are you? I mean, I should probably get you to do it. And he's like, I'm Boris. I'm like, oh, I'm Scott, how are you? And he's like, would you like a cold beer? I'm like,
would you like a cold beer?
Yeah. I'm like, absolutely. We're like, it gives me a beer. We're like talking. And I'm like, this guy's pretty cool. And I'm like, so what are you guys up to tonight? You know, just making small talk. He's like, well, we're smoking meat. We're blowing things up. And we're drinking spirits. I'm like, did we just become best friends? Like, you know? and so we talk. And his one friend comes up to me. His one friend's like, out of his mind. He's like, Scotty boy! Like he just out of nowhere, like, he's like screaming my name, and like, I don't know. He was shy. Nice guy. And we're having a fire, and I bought the little store-bought fireworks, like the little ones that are just kind of like flares and, you know, little tiny things.
Little sparklers and stuff.
Out of nowhere, we're all sitting around the fire, we just hear, and like you just see flashes going off. Everybody like jumps out of their chair. It was like the loud, it sounded like heavy artillery went off. And I was like, holy crap. And Borders is like, you like that? I'm like, yeah, I like that. He's like, we got more, man. We got more. I'm like, okay. So, you know, he stops for a while. Then he comes over. I see him. Now, I don't have a fence. I just have, like, bushes back there. So he's, like, poking his head through the bushes. Like, I got something for you. Real Russian Russian spirits. I'm like, oh, boy. And I'm like, oh, I got three other guys here. Like, and then he's like, oh, no problem. And he's like, heavy hand pours, which is just pure vodka. I'm like, oh, well, I got to take it, you know?
Uh-huh.
Take it. Night goes on. All of a sudden, baboosh, baboosh. Like, the big, like, full legit fireworks, like, from a fireworks show going up right over our head, you know, like, purples and greens. I'm like, oh, my God. Now, I don't know if you've ever been, like, right next to a firework. It's pretty intense, man, like, as far as the real ones.
Like, nothing, like, super close. I mean, I got neighbors here that have been shooting off fireworks all week and all. That's why Callie's down here in the basement. But nothing where it's, like, I'm, like, 10 feet away from the launch point or anything like that.
So every 20 minutes, he's launching one of them off. Then, sure enough, like, a half hour later, he's, like, pokes his head back through the bush. And he's, like, I got something for you. I'm like, what the, it's like meat with some sauce. He's like, try it. I'm like, what is it? He's like, chicken, some Russian chicken sausage and spicy barbecue. Delicious. More fireworks go off. And then, of course, there's like a neighbor that comes out like, yeah, like yelling at him. Like, and he's like, yeah. And then the cops come. And you could tell they didn't want anything to do with it. They're like, no fireworks over here tonight, right? He's like, no. And they're just like, okay. I think that was their way of just saying, like, look, just cool it with the fireworks. Because the one lady, I think, is pretty crazy. Like, she never comes out. And I've seen the cops at her house a few times. Or her house is like a disaster. Like, the backyard's disgusting. So I think she's like a recluse. But and then after that, my friends go home, and I'm still kind of out there hanging by the fire, watching it kind of burn out. They just start like blasting like Russian club music with like, and then like and then like American music. Creedence Clearwater came on, the Stall, and it's just like, and it's like 11:30. It's just like, I'm like, this is something else, man. So that's my new best friend Boris, by the way.
Like, right, like, just from the visions alone, like, my first favorite vision is just like his hands, like, slowly keeping creeping through your bushes and opening up. Do you like that?
Oh, pretty
yes,
much.
Yes, Boris, I do. I have more.
He also gave me a firework, like a legit one. And I'm like, I'm going to save this for something, but I'm not blowing it up in the backyard.
There have been fireworks here as there's, like, a smoldering hole in your backyard. No, officer. Is that your dog in the tree right there? Yeah, he's always weird like that.
It was funny too because like Alex, my wife, went to bed, and I'm gonna hang out because sometimes I like to sit by the fire by myself and chill. And she's like, oh no, she's like, don't do it. I'm like, why? She's like, I'm like, what? She's like, you're gonna end up hanging out with Boris and becoming like rage into the night with him. I'm like, no, I'm not. But she knows me well because that was a very good possibility, but I didn't like reel it in. But the next day I had like heartburn from the vodka and the spicy chicken sauce. It was just.
You got to pace yourself, Scotty. He's going to be your neighbor for a while.
I know.
You can't go full Boris in a night, my friend. You only can go partial Boris.
Which has me looking forward to Saturday. It's July 4th, so I have no idea what is going to be blowing up in my backyard.
But you get the feeling and all, like, he's either going to be like the coolest neighbor you ever had or the one you fear the most.
Because
you know, like, Boris is going to find out who that neighbor and call the police is.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Boris is going to make a visit.
There's a good chance KGB is coming to Denville very soon. But it's pretty good.
You're like, are there those Bolsheviks in the front yard? It's cool. It's cool, Scott.
Yeah, and he straight up got that like thick like Boris from Rocky and Bullwinkle accent, like thick. So I'm looking forward to see how this relationship develops. You know, I did say one day I'm going to replace you. Don't be surprised if the Brendan and Boris show takes off.
I got to be honest. Like, if you told me that, I'd be like, I don't blame you.
Maybe like,
there'd be like zero defense for me. Like, all right, Berlew, I got great. I got fireworks for the next 6 years. I got meats that I don't even know that I can eat at any time. I got vodkas that black me out if I ever want to forget something. And you're bringing some foolish game onto the show, is what you're telling me.
Well, we can start off with the Brennan Boris and Berlew show, the Triple B show. But I don't know. He might just take over the air. He just might push you out.
You'll just see me on the cam one day. I'd like to officially resign from the show. Berlew, that's terrible. What's that pointing in the background at your head? Absolutely nothing. That is my lovely wife, Isabel. I'm just here to say good luck to the Brennan and Boris show.
Unless,
or should I say the Boris and Brennan show in the next five minutes?
Unless it turns on me and suddenly you and Boris.
Like, Boris have like an extra special Russian friend as well. And all it's like, this is our podcast now.
This is Dmitry.
Yeah.
But yet somehow I got to still edit it and put it up and do all that.
Scott, you did not advertise on Denver Radio. Boris is not happy. Maybe Dmitry has to come over and remind you how to properly edit and promote.
Yuri is on his way to break your knees. But yeah, so I'll keep you abreast of my my budding relationship with my new best friend Boris. So.
By the way, if he blows off somebody's hand, that might end up as one of your spicy meats.
Throw some Russian fingers on the barbecue. Or
something. At least not what not.
I'm telling you that I think we do have some July 4th plans, but I hope I'm at least somewhere near my house so I can see the arsenal that's going to come out.
One, to have the fun, and two, to make sure your house is still there.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, this could be really fun now, but when I have, like, a four-month-old baby, this could get real old at the same time. But, hey, I'll report back on Monday. I'll let you know if Boris blew up the neighborhood.
Or if you're allowed to talk about it.
I heard your little cast.
Boris did not appreciate what you said.
He's probably got radios in his garage, like just listening to me speak now.
Those like 1950 radios that are like half his basement that somehow cut into
some Cold War, like
how'd you get this podcast? I don't
some Cold War bugs.
I don't see an internet connection anywhere.
He's got his headphones on, just listening to me. But yeah. Berlew, anything before we go?
Yeah, I got a quick little game for you since you brought up that the 4th of July is coming up. So Nathan's is having their hot dog challenge this weekend. Now, it's not going to be all the hubbub as it usually is. For what I apparently know, they have the competitors and they're going to bring them into a secret location just to make sure nobody tries to show up for it. They're like,
right.
I almost equivalent to Fight Island, but basically bringing them in into a bubble, having the competition, and send them right back.
You know what would be cool? I mean, not cool, but a way to do it if they had them all, like, virtually somewhere, and they just sent, like, one representative from Nathan's with, like, a ton of hot dogs to each of their Zoom feeds.
I don't know. Can you imagine a guy that's got to, like, travel to Japan to be behind Kobayashi just to flip over a number?
You know, we got I was in contact with Kobayashi, but then he just stopped talking to me. But it would have been a fun interview, or at least through his translator or something. But
here's a game I got for you, Scott. You got to basically bet your life savings that you can hit or break a food-eating world record.
Okay.
So I'm basically going to start you with the Nathan's hot dog record, which is 72 hot dogs in 10 minutes.
No.
And I'm just going to basically give you another world record, and you got to basically pick one. So we're going to see at the end, what are you going to bet your life savings on? You can win a record.
Okay. Well, I will tell you right now, it's not the hot dog one. I think okay. I could. You, real quick, you, how many did you end up eating that one time we had, you did it with Randy? We did have you do the food. Like 12
I did 11 and a half. Yeah.
Which is impressive because they were loaded up with all sorts of garbage, you know? So.
I could have probably made it to about 13 or 14, which could have been around third place if it wasn't for the duck sauce one with those basically store-bought crunchy onions, because that's just a nasty combination. That's what made me sit for a couple minutes, because that's a full belly in that.
And don't worry.
I can only imagine what Randy was going through when he tried to – he had 29 hot dogs, and then he had to bite into that –
ghost pepper
that,
one.
That, like, ghost pepper one.
Yeah. Don't worry. You could have won Berlu, and they still would have been like, well, technically – technically, you didn't win it within the right time frame, and you did it where you didn't say – like, that guy was real shady with his
Real and shitty, man. Yeah, he did buy us food at Applebee's, and we saw the UFC fight with Randy. But, yeah, I do recall, like, I stood up for a minute. He's like, no standing. I'm like, well, isn't he doing it standing? And then he shut up and let me continue.
Yeah,
very weird. It's
very weird rules.
It's one of those, like, those kids that make up a game, and then, like, as they're losing, they magically have, oh, that you broke rule X512-4 that you use your left hand to roll the dice.
Yeah. Bad. So,
all right, so Scott, your choices are 72 hot dogs in 10 minutes or 255 marshmallow peeps in 5 minutes.
So I have to try to attempt one.
So basically, everything you owe in life that goes against one of these challenges. You have to do one of these challenges.
255 peeps. I guess the hot dogs, man. There's just no physical way to do peeps. I'd rather go savory than sweet. It's the only reason I could even think about it.
Okay, so
I'm going to be broke.
Right now, you're eating 72 hot dogs in 10 minutes. Gotcha.
Very broke.
Okay, how about either 72 hot dogs in 10 minutes or 12 hamburgers in 3 minutes?
I go with the hamburgers. I mean, I'm sure they're pretty – it's almost undoable, but even just the number 12 seems a lot more a chance than 72.
In your brain, yeah. It's feasable.
Right, yes.
Even though when it's in front of you, you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so now we're advancing 12 hamburgers in 3 minutes or 21 ounces of mashed potatoes in 30 seconds.
30 seconds? Like, I'm guessing that means you got to swallow it completely. So here's my thinking. Like, if someone did that, 30 seconds, I can't imagine... Like it's possible, so I can't imagine that there's that much time. Like if it was like there was over a couple minutes, I would know it's hard. To me, if it's 30 seconds, it's somewhat doable. Whereas the 12 hamburgers, I know I couldn't do it. And I feel like mashed potatoes have a almost ice cream like texture to them, and might be able to just you know, I got a pretty big mouth, I guess. Maybe if I can do like a crane eating a fish, to kind of like get it down there in one in one shot.
So you're just seeing like 2 pounds of mashed potatoes over your head and just pouring it down your throat like in the cartoons.
Yeah. Now I want to like watch someone do this. Like I want to see if that's on there. But yeah, I'll go mashed potatoes.
Okay. So we're going to advance mashed potatoes. So 21 ounces of mashed potatoes in 30 seconds or 113 hotcakes in 8 minutes.
Hotcakes like pancakes?
I would think that. Okay. I don't know what the technical difference is between hotcakes and pancakes. All
right. I'm going to go. I'm going to stick with potatoes on that one.
The pancakes,
it just seems like so much weight and density. And I'm not even the biggest pancake guy to begin with. And I at least potatoes. I'm not like a big, like, bready type of breakfast. Like, I'm not big into the waffles or the French toast or the pan. I'm more of like an eggs and meat and breakfast potato kind of guy.
Hmm. Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. 21 ounces of mashed potatoes in 30 seconds or 121 Twinkies in 6 minutes.
No chance. I'm sticking with potatoes. That sweetness just, and that I just feel like the idea of that big ball of sugar and fluff forming in your stomach. I don't eat a lot of sweets, and like we'll have ice cream in the house. And then when I do eat ice cream, I got to go for like the second bowl, and then I feel absolutely gross after, and I'm like, and then I don't want ice cream again for like 3 weeks. But when I do eat the sweet, like the ice cream, I like, oh, it's good, and I eat too much. But I know that feeling. I can't even imagine what it feels like to have 120 Twinkies. So
on a side note, as you brought up ice cream, I hearken back to the time you, me, and your wife went to the local ice cream store, and you probably had a good 4 or 5 beers, and you were feeling happy that
okay.
day. And I just remember like it was like a crowded place where we had to get a number,
mm-hmm.
and then like every 2 minutes, like they would call a number. You try to be funny and look at us and be like, "Watch this," and I'll. That's me. That's me. And like you did it like 7 times where it's like, dude, I think they got the hint on you. But it was an enjoyable moment to see you thinking you were.
I probably could have done it.
Okay. A couple more for you, Scott. Are you going to do 21 ounces of mashed potatoes in 30 seconds or regular marshmallows 25 in 1 minute? Now, it has to be impossible, but at the same time, as I read it, it sounds doable in my head.
Yeah. I'm thinking the marshmallows are kind of big now. I'm thinking of 25 of them. It's probably just a lot. Like, I remember when we tried to do Fluffy Bunny back in the day with marshmallows, and the texture of marshmallows gets kind of gross, but 1 minute seems like a decent amount of time. You know, I'm going to stick with the potatoes, though. I do see how I'd find that one more comparable. Like, I might be able to do that one. That seems somewhat reasonable. But I don't know. I like potatoes just better.
Okay,
30 seconds is insane, but I don't know.
Okay, we got two more here. 21 ounces of potatoes in 30 seconds or 47 burritos in 10 minutes.
47 burritos? Dude, I had one burrito for lunch today, and I felt like crap afterwards. It was huge, and I wolfed it. I'm going with potatoes.
Old Joey Chestnut got that record. And finally, your last option, it's either going to be the 21 ounces of potatoes or 86 and a quarter ounces of mayonnaise in 3 minutes.
Not having it. Nope, potatoes. Oh, God. That is so disgusting.
Yeah, I saw the video. I was gagging the entire time. Look, I'm
No way.
I barely put mayonnaise. It's only on, like, macaroni and potato salad I put mayonnaise in. I couldn't fathom just opening a jar and just getting a big-ass spoon and just hoving it into my mouth.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely old. I'm not the biggest mayo guy. I'm kind of like you. If it's in potato salad, that's fine. If it's in something that I don't know, it's like too much of it, that's fine. But no way am I doing that. So I'm gonna stick with potatoes. I know it came up that earlier, but I mean that came all earlier right. in the competition. But I kind of want to try it.
All right, you heard it here. So on the 4th of July, we're going over Scotty's. He's going to give us our banking information. So if he fails, we get his money. And he's going to try 21 ounces of potatoes in 30 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, at least I don't feel like I would feel like absolute death afterwards. I mean, and 30 seconds isn't a lot. So if I fail, then I only have like 12 ounces of potatoes. I'd be like, oh, well, it was only 30 seconds I had anyway to beat it. So, I don't know. But, yeah, which one would you go with?
I'd probably try the marshmallow one. I think that, I mean, it's just by hearing it, it sounds doable. I'm not the hugest mashed potato guy. I'm more into, like, cubes and stuff. I mean, it's a little dangerous because they say that is the only thing the Heimlich will never work on is marshmallows. But there's something about the number. It says, like, and if I put a little bit of training into it, I could see something happening there. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I think so, too. The problem is, like, God, you would be, like, such a fat bastard if you were training to have marshmallow-eating competitions over and over again. You know? It's just like, God, there's no way of running that off. That's just too much pure sugar just blasting into you. But
all those marathons I ran for nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yeah, the training on that is just so bad. But, all right, man. Good hang tonight. Anything to promote before we roll on out of here?
Yeah, a local comedian in New Jersey, Gordon Baker Bone, he is doing a GoFundMe. He's working on a docuseries. Gordon, he's a very funny comedian. He's very well educated in Black history. He had shows in New York and Drunk Black History, and he's been on the American Loser podcast talking about and so forth, but he's doing a GoFundMe to try to raise some money to get the equipment to do this docuseries. So if you go on to GoFundMe.com and look up Backing Baker Bones BHM docuseries, you can help him out. Like I say, he's a very hilarious comedian. I believe he's done a Verbal Shenanigans show for us, and he's very educated, and I would very much look forward to this. So
for sure, so go check that out. And kind of in the same pew, no, same church, different pew, former guest of the show Jeffrey Gurian. Jeffrey is like a comedy I don't know, like kind of
historian,
yeah.
Interviewer,
yeah. Jeffrey,
you
was
name it, he's been a part of it.
Yeah, Jeffrey was on episode 255 of ours. And he's worked with all the greats, the Bill Burrs, the Patrice O'Neills, everyone. We had him on the show. He's a really cool guest. I've worked with him before once or twice. He does stand-up, too. He actually he was in the hospital with COVID-19 for a couple weeks, and he wrote all about it. It sounded awful. But he actually has a documentary about him made by Derek R. Brown. It's called Who the F is Jeffrey Gurian? It's a documentary short film, and it's going to be available. It made its premiere just 2 days ago, so you could find it right online. Just look it up, Who the F is Jeffrey Gurian, and show some support. He was a cool guy. And that's it, guys. I want to thank Janet Devlin for a very fun interview. And that's it, Mike. Good hang tonight. Life is funny, guys. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Good then next week for me, Boris. Tears from my
eyes. Pastrovia.
Sir embraces gentle forehead kisses, making sure that I was alright. As I grew older and the nights grew shorter,